Hello everyone and welcome to DAC Beechcroft's Lawcast. I'm Nikki Fairbairn, a partner in our real estate team here at DAC Beechcroft. And in this episode of our Property Headaches series, I'm talking to Gwyneth Barton and George Taylor from our real estate litigation team. I've spoken to George previously about another topic, but delighted to have George and also Gwyneth along today. We're going to be talking about Renters' Rights Act, which, George, I might start with you, actually, because there's been an awful lot of coverage about this recently. Maybe let's just go back to basics for a second. How has the Act come about and what's it looking to achieve?
Thanks, Nikki. Yes, you're definitely right. There has been a lot of coverage about it. So it's the response to the government's manifesto commitment to transform the experience of private renting. And that includes probably most notably ending Section 21 no-fault evictions. So the general attitude, the mood music, appeared to be that too many tenants in the private rented sector are being taken advantage of. And what the Act is intended to give is much greater security to renters so that they can stay in good quality homes for longer without the risk of being made homeless through no fault of their own. Whilst the government has commented that the majority of landlords provide a good service, the private rented sector, in the government's view, currently provides the least affordable, poorest quality, and most insecure housing of all tenures. So their reaction to that is to introduce the Act. And in terms of main provisions, the Act will abolish Section 21 evictions and move to a simpler tenancy structure where all assured tenancies are periodic. There's a question mark as to whether that is more simple, but we'll see. It intends to ensure possession grounds are fair to both parties. So on the one hand, it gives tenants more security, but it also ensures that landlords can recover their property when it's reasonable for them to do so. The Act also sets out to provide stronger protections against backdoor evictions by ensuring that tenants are able to appeal excessive above market rents, which are purely designed to force them out. And the Act in time will also apply the decent home standard to give renters safer, better value homes and remove the blight of poor quality homes in local communities. And the government has also confirmed that the Act will strengthen local authority enforcement by expanding civil penalties, introducing a package of investigatory powers and bringing in a new requirement for local authorities to report on enforcement activity.
Thanks for that overview, George. I mean, the Act's quite a far-reaching bit of legislation, isn't it? I mean, there's quite a lot to get your head around, though. Do we have an idea about when all of these provisions are going to come into force yet?
Yes, I mean, there's definitely a lot to it. The Act actually received Royal Assent on the 27th of October, but none of its substantive provisions came into force straight away. It wasn't until mid-November that information on deadlines was released, that the government at that time published its implementation roadmap. And the deadline that probably jumped out of the page the most was the 30th of April 2026, which is the last day that a landlord can serve a Section 21 notice to bring an assured short-hold tenancy to an end. With the implementation of the first phase of the Act to commence the day after on the 1st of May. But the roadmap included a host of other deadlines and confirmed dates for publication of a number of important additional regulations. So the measures in the Act are to be introduced in three phases from the 1st of May, although there is an additional deadline of the 27th of December, in which local councils will be given new investigatory powers and a stronger ability to inspect properties. So in terms of phase one, there are a raft of measures to be introduced from the 1st of May, which will include the abolition of Section 21 evictions, the introduction of assured periodic tenancies, the reform of possession grounds, and a ban on rental bidding and taking payment of more than 1 month's rent in advance. So phase one is a very important phase. Probably the most substantive provisions will kick in from then. Phase two commences from late 2026, in which the private rented sector database and landlord ombudsman will be introduced. So signing up to the database will be mandatory for all private rented sector landlords, and they're required to pay an annual fee, which hasn't been confirmed yet. So regulations will mandate landlord registration and the provision of key information. So it isn't yet clear what that database will cover, but it is likely to include provision for landlords' contact details, information as to the property itself, and safety information such as gas, electricity, and energy performance certificates. So the Ombudsman, the intention of that is to provide a redress service for tenants when things go wrong. And it also supports landlords with tools, guidance on training on handling complaints. Finally, phase three intends to introduce a new decent home standard in the private rented sector. This intends to ensure that all private rented sector properties meet a minimum standard of housing quality and provide local councils with powers to take enforcement action if those properties fail to meet it. Now, it's proposed that that's brought into force in either 2035 or 2037, so a long way before that comes into force. So there are significant concerns over some of those dates, particularly with the government confirming that the secondary legislation, so the regulations that they need to pass, won't come into force until early 2026. And what that means is there isn't going to be much time for landlords to ensure that they have all their ducks in a row before phase one commences.
Yeah, because it strikes me there's an awful lot of change happening and lots of things that landlords are going to have to be considering, and not just landlords, I think actually letting agents as well, with only a few months to go until that first phase comes into play. Gwyneth, I might bring you in at this point as well. If we think about this from the landlord's perspective, what sort of key steps are they having to think about now to be prepared for this?
Thanks, Nikki. We know that our landlord clients have been aware of these proposals coming down the pipeline, have had a keen eye on what that might mean for their portfolios. So I'm hoping that for the majority of our landlord clients, these changes will not be a shock to them. However, it does seem a critical time for the landlords to take stock, decide how they want to proceed now that the provisions and the dates have been set. I would say that the first step would be to review your tenancy portfolio and agreements, work out who is occupying what and on what basis, and when their tenancies may be ending. You also need to think about the wider picture. Are there any particularly problematic properties or tenants that you would like to regain possession of before the commencement date? Are there properties you may be looking to redevelop or sell in the near future? If so, it may be sort of sensible to consider serving a Section 21 notice now, or even a Section 8 notice under the current regime. There will be some transitional provisions, and so, for example, Section 21 notices will remain valid for a period of 6 months from the date of service, or 3 months from the commencement date, whichever is sooner. But ideally, we want landlords to be looking at this and getting on and serving any notices sooner rather than later. For the existing tenancies, you will need to serve the information sheet by 31st of May 2026. And for any oral tenancies which you might have, you will need to serve a written statement of terms setting out the basic headlines of the tenancy. So landlords will need to keep an eye as to when the regulations come in. This is mooted for March time, and at that point we'll know what sort of form that this written statement of terms will take and also what the information sheet will contain. And at that point, landlords will need to consider how they're going to serve those forms, especially where they've got a large portfolio. Then landlords may also want to have a look at their standard tenancy agreement and see what changes will need to be made to ensure compliance with the provisions of the Act. For example, you might want to look at removing and making sure that there's no provisions in your current tenancy agreements which may be caught by the new prohibition regarding rent payments in advance. Some landlords may also want to consider whether assured tenancies are the right type of occupation for their properties. It may be that actually a licence or a service tenancy would be more appropriate. However, this comes with a massive health warning that these type of rental occupations can only be used in specific circumstances. So you should only consider these options after taking proper legal advice. But in essence, now seems a good time for landlords to really take stock of their portfolio and what they wish to do with their properties.
Thanks, Gwyneth. So I can see that Obviously, I can see what the Act is looking to achieve, and it's trying to help landlords navigate its way, navigate their way through it, by the sounds of it. But from your perspective, have you got concerns about the reforms and what's going to happen, how it's going to pan out over the next few months?
Yes, certainly. I mean, there's been a lot of press and noise around some of the more headline-friendly reforms, particularly around pets. But I think for us litigators and us at the sort of front of this, we are mostly concerned as to how these reforms will work in practice and essentially how the court system will cope. As always with these matters, the devil will be in the detail and how those provisions are interpreted by the court. I mean, it is true that a large number of possession matters never make it to court as people simply move out once they've received a notice. But we do know that there are a significant number of people who do not move out, and the court is already struggling to deal with those claims. I know that George and I have both seen that there are substantial backlogs and delays in getting possession claims listed. And as litigators, I can only see this is getting worse, especially in the short and medium term, as there will be undoubtedly be a rush of people serving Section 21 notices ahead of the deadline. That being said, it would be safe to say that all of us who have been dealing with residential tenancies over the years are aware of the need for change and reform. So we hope that, as we have seen before with big wholesale changes of key areas of law, that after a few months of uncertainty and teething problems, everyone can start seeing whether the reforms have achieved their goals as set out by George at the beginning, or whether further tweaks are needed.
That's brilliant. Thank you, Gwyneth. And I can see this probably being the first of a series of podcasts that we do about the Renters' Rights Act as we navigate our way through the next few months and see how things work out in practice. So from me for the moment, a big thank you to you both, Gwyneth Barthen and George Taylor, for taking the time to chat us through this topic today. And thank you to everybody listening. And we look forward to you joining us on another of our Lawcast podcasts soon. Many thanks.